Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 253. And we are going out, I believe, Coach Self, you are my first ever guest from the state of Arizona.
How's that? That is awesome.
How's that for breaking ground?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're breaking ground as big as the Grand Canyon. See? Look at that. There's an Arizona reference for you right there, Karen.
I don't know if it's that big, so.
Well, anyway, it is Karen Self, head girls basketball coach at Seton Catholic Prep out of Arizona here, the Phoenix area. Coach Self's had a great career, done a great job, and we're going to talk more to her here in just a minute. But we are, of course, going to thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balanced neck or spinal issues, have them go see Cosac Chiropractic. Give them a call, 402-964-0300. Just be sure to let them know that A Pen and a Napkin sent you. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening to this, obviously you're listening to it, so subscribe, download, rate, review, give us 5 stars, say good things about A Pen and a Napkin so folks get to know about us a little bit more here. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Go check out apenandanapkin.com. It's a great website for about anything you would need to help you out with your coaching career. All sorts of other stuff. I'll have commercials and all that stuff that we'll put in there as well. Enough with all that. Coach Self, how are you this fine? What is it? Tuesday evening.
Hi, I am doing great. The season just got started. We had our scrimmage last night, and we are rapidly approaching our first game. And yeah, just loving the start of the season.
Yeah, awesome. So Karen and I met, I think it was 2 falls ago, at the USA Gold Camp in Omaha here, and it is long overdue to have her on the podcast, and I am excited to have Karen on here. She's had, like I said, she's had a great career, and she's just keeping on here, and I think it's just appropriate to start with that, Coach. Just tell, for the folks that don't know a whole lot about you, tell us a little bit about yourself, your basketball journey from your youth to from the mean streets of New York, or not maybe not the mean streets of New York, but from the state of New York to Arizona, and how you've ended up at Seton Catholic Prep for as long as you have.
Awesome. Well, first of all, I just want to say thanks for having me on. This is awesome to get a chance to visit with you. And also, I've really enjoyed the podcast. So this is so fun for me to actually now be a part of it.
Oh, thank you.
So I am originally from New York, although I moved around quite a bit as a kid. So I lived all over the Midwest. I lived in California, was born in New York, and then returned there for my high school career. Mm-hmm. I'm from a rather small town in New York, High Park, which is the closest city to High Park would be maybe Poughkeepsie.
Okay.
Which is, it's right on the Hudson River, beautiful area, near Marist College is in Poughkeepsie. So I've actually had some players that have gone on to play there. But yeah, it's a great area in New York State. It's where people go for, you know, when they go to see the leaves turn in the fall, they go to the Mid-Hudson Valley. It's a beautiful area. Okay. And so I played my high school career there, and was lucky enough to get recruited by Arizona State. And so I headed out to Arizona for my college career, played 4 years at Arizona State, and happened to meet my husband while I was in college. So I decided, well, I think I'll probably just stick around and see what happens. And yeah, almost 30 years later, we'll celebrate our 30th anniversary in July. So mm-hmm. Yeah, we have 4 kids, and including triplets. We have a 24-year-old and 3 22-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, so after my playing career, I was kind of just trying to figure out, like, what I wanted to do with my life and where I wanted to be. And I was working in youth sports for the YMCA, which was a great experience. But a friend that also worked for the Y said that the school in Chandler was looking for a coach. And so I decided to apply. They said it paid $2,000. And I thought, well, that sure sounds like a lot of money. It's like kind of basketball. So I was actually enticed by the salary. And I knew, I think, you know, in my head, I always wanted to coach basketball. And I was never the most athletic player on the court, but I felt like my, you know, like one of the best attributes that I had as a player was a good, strong basketball IQ. Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know, that would translate to coaching. And so I applied, and I was one of two applicants for the job. And so luckily I got it.
Sorry, yeah. I don't mean to laugh that hard, but it's a funny story. So
yeah, and honestly, they had advertised it for I guess 6 months before and had gotten no applicants. So they re-advertised. I mean, we're talking 1992. You know, sure. I mean, it was like a long time ago. And so they advertised again, and so a friend told me about it, and so I applied, and I was lucky enough to get it. And so I just started coaching there, and yeah, it's been an amazing journey, an absolute mm-hmm. amazing journey. But I have been at Seton Catholic for my entire coaching career.
Yeah, yeah. Like you said, it was $2,000 at the age of 23, which I agree with you. If somebody were to give me a lump sum of $2,000 when I was 23, I'd have been like, all right, Vegas, here we come. Yeah, you know, here we go.
I think I was trying to pay my rent with it.
Did you ever think that, you know, $2,000 would change your life so drastically?
Oh, no, I had no idea. When I applied for the job, the other applicant, I was told that I needed to take her as my assistant because I was so young, and they uh-huh. were like, we need, you know, but I think maybe having played at Arizona State, and I'm not even sure why they gave me the head job. And so after the first practice, she actually called me up and she said, I'm not coming back. She was like, you have no idea what you're doing. And I was like, you are correct. I have no idea what I'm doing. So she basically quit on me after the first day. And I always wonder if she ever like followed us like after that, because the first year was pretty rough. Uh-huh. But then after year one, we kind of settled in, and I did figure out a couple of things. And so it's been like pretty smooth sailing since then.
You think she's still mad about the $2,000?
I don't think so. I'm sure she had a very, very good job, and this was going to be her side gig. Uh-huh. I don't think money played any role in her decision.
It's kind of funny, you know, you do mention that, but in all seriousness, you had in getting ready for tonight, you had said on multiple occasions that you went through that first year, and I think you were 13-13 or somewhere around that number.
Yeah. I think we ended up 12-14 that
yeah,
year.
Yeah. You almost quit. You wanted to quit, and you just couldn't get up enough gumption to tell the administration that you were going to quit.
Yeah, I definitely. Okay. So one of the great things that has come out of being a coach for this long is I've kind of found myself as a person, and I've been able to find a way to kind of speak up a little bit more. But coming from a small town, being very, very insecure and fundamentally shy, I was terrified of my athletic director. I was terrified of the principal. And I was like, well, and back then, I mean, email didn't exist. The internet didn't exist. So I mean, I either had to call them on the phone or show up on campus in person and talk to somebody face to face and tell them I didn't want to come back. And because it was hard. I mean, that first year was such a steep, steep learning curve for me.
Yeah, I was just going to say, what was so difficult for you that first year?
Well, honestly, like, I think I had all these ideas in my head, and I wasn't really sure where I wanted to go with any one of them. You know, mm-hmm. I was I definitely have ADHD, and I definitely struggle with being a little bit scattered. And so for that first year, I think I really had a hard time, like, kind of like honing in on like really what I wanted to focus on and what I wanted our identity to be as a team. Mm-hmm. I don't even think I thought about like a team having an identity. I was just like, well, we have a game. We have to figure this out. Mm-hmm. And I also felt like, you know, I feel like, you know, probably I had better than average athleticism compared to the average person, maybe not compared to people in the Pac 10 or the Pac 12 as it was right before it collapsed, you know? Mm-hmm. But like, so for college basketball, I felt like I'm a step slower than other people. I got to be smarter than them. But compared to the average person, I could pretty much pick up any sport, and I played almost all of them. as a kid. And so it always just came so easily to me that when I said to my players, you know, hey, I want you to do this, like, it didn't look the way I thought it would look in my head. You know, they came out on the court and it just definitely wasn't the same. And so we didn't progress, I think, the way I had hoped or wanted, or, you know, just things weren't gelling the way I think in my head I wanted them to. And so we lost more than I, and there were times where we lost games that I thought we should have won. And so it was just, you know, it's challenging. And I was young and I just wanted it to be better. Yeah. And, but in the end, like, I did love it. And, but it was hard with the job that I had. I was getting a little bit of pressure at my job about coaching. Mm-hmm. And, so I just was kind of like, I'll tell them later. I'll call them another time. But if you know anything about ADHD, you also know out of sight, out of mind. And so unless it's like written on my hand, it's probably not going to happen. And so I just put it off for so long, that we got right up before the start of the season. And I was like crying. And I was like, what am I going to do? What am I going to say? And my boyfriend, who is now my husband, said, you cannot leave them high and dry. You are like less than a month out from the start of the season. Like, you got to coach this year. And then if you want to quit after the year two, then go ahead and quit. But like, It's really, you know, it took them forever to find you. And you're going to leave in 1 year and give them zero notice. That's just wrong. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you're right. It is definitely wrong. It's totally not something I can do to them. Yeah. And then in year two, the bug just like bit me. And mm-hmm. then I was hooked. And then we were a little bit more successful. And I started to kind of get a vision of like where I wanted to go as a team. What was our defensive identity? And that's kind of really where I hung my hat for my whole career, is like, we're going to be a great defensive team. Mm-hmm. It's just taken off from there.
Yeah. In your seasoned and experienced state, Karen, we, as you know, we don't use the O word on the pod. Yeah. What have been some of the great lessons you've learned in your coaching career?
Patience, just a ton of patience. And I think, just, you know, you always hear the old quotes from like Pat Summitt, like, kids don't care what you know until they know you care. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's so true. And so for me, the most important thing is, you know, I am not interested in being a transactional coach.
Yeah.
I am more interested in being a transformational coach. And so the relationships that I build with my players are meant to be lifelong. Mm-hmm. Now, not everybody is open to that. And not everybody, you know, is able to kind of let down their guard enough to really embrace that idea.
Let people in that way.
Yeah, let people in. But many, many are. And so for those that are, it's absolutely amazing. So so just making sure that I put those relationships first is one of the most important lessons. And I think that translates, as with everything, sports parallels life. And so, but taking care of the people that, you know, are important to you and putting relationships first is never going to be a bad strategy. Mm-hmm. That's super important for me. I think patience, when I became a mom, that also taught me, patience. I think learning and understanding about my own ADHD, but then also about like, my family members that may have other neurodivergent conditions. Like, I am a strong advocate for coaches knowing and understanding what it's like to coach the neurodiverse athlete. It's actually a topic I'm going to try and talk about at the WDCA convention this year when I go. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like set up with a group of people to do a talk at the convention. So I just think it's really, really important that we not punish kids and not make them feel less than, because their brain works a little bit differently. And I think that is a huge lesson that we can take from coaching, because I don't think there's a coach out there that doesn't have a kid on their team that's dyslexic, ADHD,
yep,
perhaps autism, something. And so, finding ways to help them, find the strengths in their differences, you know, you know, just kind of like constantly punishing it. I mean, they talk about like how kids with ADHD, hear tens of thousands more negative messages before in life before they turn 12 years old.
Yeah.
And yet we go out there as coaches and we say things to kids all the time. How many times have I told you that? Like, how do you not remember the play? Like, I mean, just all the little comments that coaches make all the time that are so internalized by those kids in a very different way.
Yeah.
I think those are important things that we can take from sport and or take from life and translate to sport.
What are some ways that you think coaches can coach kids better with those conditions?
I think we have to recognize, what does that look like? What is the outward appearance of that when you have a player that's like that? So if you have a kid that's on the spectrum, you know, coaches are constantly all the time saying, like, eyes on coach, like, you need to be looking at coaches when they're talking to you. Well, if you have a kid that's on the autism spectrum, they're not going to be looking at you.
Yeah.
And then to punish them for not looking at the coach and not being respectful and looking at the coach, like, that just seems so counterproductive. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Or, you know, you have the kid that just can't get into a huddle without, cracking a joke to the person next to them, or, you know what I mean? They have very, very little impulse control. So how we deal with that, do we deal with it by punishing them, or do we deal with it in a different way and just gently reminding them, you know, put a hand on their shoulder while you're addressing the team, you know, like, there are ways that you can, but you have to know what to look for. And so you have to know and understand, like, what your players are facing mm-hmm. and how that's going to look to you as a coach. Some of those kids, they might be just, I mean, I had a player who was dyslexic and she couldn't remember the plays. She just really struggled to memorize things.
Yeah.
And so we had to do it in many, many different ways, on paper, you know, on the whiteboard, walking through it, running through it, like, just, and these are all things that we would normally do, but for her, that wasn't enough.
Yeah.
And so she needed extra. And so just, like, instead of yelling at a kid and being like, how do you not remember the play? You know, which I probably have said to kids before, you know what I mean? And especially in the early days before I had my own children. I just think if you know how that's going to present from a player, and you know what to look for, then you might have a different approach on how you coach them.
Mm-hmm. What about being, and one thing that I've really picked up on you in the couple of times that we've worked together, Karen, is, you know, you're such a strong leader for young women to emulate. And, you know, it's getting harder and harder to find really good coaches that want to stay with it as long as we've stayed with it in our careers. I'm guessing that that's something that you take that responsibility really, really seriously, you know, how do you try to show that to any of the players that you coach?
I feel like I've had some really strong female role models in my life mm-hmm. that have taught me, you know, how to put people first, how to follow through on things, like, do what you say you're going to do. And I've also just taught me how to be for lack of a better word, just a gritty person, you know, like,
yeah.
I, you know what I mean? Whether it comes to, like, how I played as a player, I think it all starts with my mom. My mom is one of the strongest people that I know. And, you know, just incredibly intelligent, incredibly kind, incredibly patient. Just an amazing role model for me. But also, we didn't always have it easy growing up. And, you know, there were times where we were short on money and, you know, and my dad was out of work and so my mom was trying to raise three small kids with, you know, a part-time job. I mean, just trying to, like, figure it out, you know,
sure.
And she just always found a way. She always found a way. I would say, like, I believed in Santa until eighth grade because I knew that my family could not afford the Christmas that we would have, but somehow she would. I mean, she worked a second job. She stayed up until 2 a.m. sewing slip covers and draperies for people's homes to make money to be able to afford Christmas for us. Wow. And so she would always find a way. And I think, you know, any story of success in our family comes from her.
Mm-hmm.
And then just, you know, like, I had a great, you know, strong college coach. I had, right after I graduated and I started coaching, you know, kind of a new upstart, started at Arizona State. She had previously been at Northern Arizona. Charlie Turner Thorne was the head coach at Arizona State for 25 years, took him to the Elite Eight twice. Just like an incredible coach, but also just an incredible mentor. You know, she just was so giving of her time and her knowledge to people, to me, but to everyone. I mean, she's just really, really a great mentor. You know, and then Ann Myers-Drysdale, you know, GM for the Suns, like everything that she's accomplished in her career. When I was a kid, like that's who you wanted to be, because sure, there was only her and Nancy Lieberman in terms of women's basketball. Those were like, they were the absolute icons. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten to know Annie, you know, over the years, because she's here in Phoenix, and she's, you know, been a huge supporter of me at Seton, and just really a really giving person. And so I feel like when you have some strong role models like that, that can like kind of teach you how to handle hard situations or how to treat other coaches or other people. I mean, I just think it just molds you and shapes you. Honestly, I think my Seton Catholic community has really helped, you know, shape who I am as a person, especially during those early young years where I felt like I had a lot of growing up to do. And I had a lot of really good people at Seton who just kind of helped me, like, okay, in this situation, I think I could have handled it a little bit differently. And I could have, you know, and just a lot of guidance, just a lot of patience and a lot of guidance. And I feel like that's shaped me into who I am.
Mm-hmm. Folks, if you are looking for a good book, guess what? I have got something for you. Kings of Their Court, Three Teams, One City, and the Greatest Basketball Season in Nebraska High School History is available today on Amazon.com. It is the story of Tim Cannon at Millard North, Josh Ludke at Creighton Prep, and Doug Woodard at Bellevue West, and the three teams that they had during the 2021 season, the chaos that everybody was living through. The story literally picks up with the outbreak of COVID in March of 2020, and it carries through for the next 365 days. Everything that these players, these parents, these coaches, that they went through, from COVID quarantines to George Floyd to the politics of the time to just trying to get the season in a somewhat normal fashion, with these three teams from this one city that were ranked in the top 25 in the country. Now, think about that. That would be hard to do in a New York and a Los Angeles. We had that here in Omaha, Nebraska. It is a terrific, terrific book. Of course, I'm a little biased because I'm the one that wrote it, but I think that if you're a basketball person, or if you like a good sports story, a very amateurish version of Friday Night Lights for basketball, this is the type of story that you're really, really going to enjoy. So go to Amazon.com, go to books, type in Kings of Their Court, and it's going to take you right there to it. It's $19.99 for the paperback, $9.99 for the Kindle version. Folks, check it out. I think it's a really, really great story, and I don't think you're going to regret picking up a copy of Kings of Their Court. You mentioned Ann Myers, you know, basketball legend. Like you say, it was her and Nancy Lieberman were kind of the two of the main early players in the women's game of prominence. Another person that you put down, Karen, which I was kind of interested to kind of get the connection there, Doug Bruno. You know, what's the connection there, and what influence has he had on your career?
Well, I feel I would credit him with like just teaching me how to play. my dad coached me when I was little. He put a ball in my hands when I was little, and he taught me a ton of stuff. But I grew up primarily in my elementary grades and junior high in Illinois and Indiana. Mm-hmm. And so he was in Illinois. Before he was even with DePaul, I knew him as the head coach of the Chicago Hustle. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you remember that, but that was like the WBL way back in the early 80s. And so he ran an entirely girls basketball camp. And I would go to that 2 weeks every summer for like my entire time that I lived there. And it was the only girls camp that existed that I knew about. Mm-hmm. Because when I was a kid, I had to go to boys basketball camp, and I would go to boys overnight camps. And like I would go, like that's all that there was. I played boys basketball all the way through eighth grade.
Sure.
And so having Doug Bruno as, you know, I'm obviously he's the camp director, so he wasn't hands-on with every single player. But I just saw him as this like unbelievable person that could put together a girls basketball camp and you'd have 200 girls every single week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was a great mentor in that he would, you know, he did take a little bit more personal approach with me because I was in camp all the time. And so he was a person that I always looked up to, gave great advice. And I always felt like when he would talk to the group, like he would give like a little lecture to the group, like I always felt like he was talking to me. Like it almost felt like he was like, I'm going to give this talk because Karen needs it. That's how I felt when I was a kid. I was like, he can see into my heart. He can know, he knows my mind.
He's burning into my soul right now.
Literally, like every talk he gave, I was like, oh my God, I identify with that like so much. Like I'm in this post and I'm reporting it. Like I feel completely attacked kind of thing. And so, but in a really good way, you know what I mean? And so I think he helped shape my philosophy of basketball quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's a really good dude.
Yeah. One of the things I noticed as well is, as I was getting ready for tonight, looking at your program, looking at your staff, the most recent look that I had, Coach, all of your assistant coaches are alums of your program, and I assume that you coach them. What's that, you know, how rewarding is that to have your former players with you? How does that make your job easier? You know, was it kind of hard for them at times to challenge you because you were their coach? I got to tell Coach that I think she's wrong on this. I think we should go zone instead of man, or, you know, whatever the situation may be. I mean, what's that whole thing been like for you, Karen?
It's been awesome, but also they have no problem putting me in my place. They tell me, no, you're dead wrong. So, you know, it's almost like maybe when they're in high school, maybe they didn't feel like they could, so now they're going to get them up. But, you know, actually, it's been amazing. My JV coach has been with me. This is year 17 for her. My freshman coach, which we are a little bit short on numbers, so she's kind of doubling like a little bit of JV, a little bit of RC with us. She's class of 2000 for my school. So, she was on the first three state championship teams. Uh-huh. So she played varsity as a freshman. And so we won 97, 98 and 99. She was on all of those. And then my JV coach was on, I think, one state championship team. And then my varsity assistant was on two state championship teams. So so all of them, just, they know what I'm thinking. They know how I teach. They know what I want. And they're hungry to learn too. So like my varsity assistant and I will go to the Final Four every year together. And like, we just like eat that up. Like we just love it because like sometimes it just confirms what we already think. Sometimes it opens like a new, mm-hmm. you know, idea, a new thought process that we can just bounce ideas off of each other. But like, it is so amazing to have alumni, people that still want to be around the program, that still want to be around me, that I have these lifelong relationships with, which is amazing. And just, they're super knowledgeable and I trust them immensely because I know that they know exactly how I want things taught. And so, I mean, they're just, yeah, I'm so grateful for them and just very, very lucky that they would come back and coach with me.
Mm-hmm. You are, and again, this is history teacher math, so forgive me, math and economics teacher, but 814 wins in your career there at Seton Prep, which, you know, all of those wins have been there. The state record, if I'm correct, is 832 by my research. Is that, am I correct on that?
Pretty darn close.
Okay. All right. Have you thought about what it's going to be like when eventually you get past 832, 833, and now that top dog on the list is going to be Karen Self of Seton Catholic Prep?
So I haven't really thought about like it from the perspective of like a top dog. What I have thought about is like, I can't wait for it to be over so I never have to think about it again. I'm not really one that enjoys like the limelight at all. Like I would rather, you know, that old meme of like like Homer Simpson, like fading into the hedges.
Sure, yeah.
Just like back again. Like that is how I wish to approach life. Like, let me just hide. Like, let me just fade into the hedges there. But so, you know, I recently passed 800 wins. And so I was kind of like, I tried very hard to keep that, like, just kind of keep those things very.
Keep perspective on it.
Like quiet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But also just keep them quiet. Like, I don't tell anybody. And like, sometimes people discover it and sometimes they don't. I think my 700th win, nobody knew. Like, nobody was paying attention at all. And I was fine with that. I made my kids, I was like, we're going to dinner as a family. And they were like, why? And I'm like, because. Like, I don't even think I told them. Maybe I had to admit it to get them in the car. But I was like, no, we're going. And that's all I want to do is go out to dinner as a family and just like kind of quietly celebrate that together. For 800, I kind of like downplayed it. But for this, I actually told my assistant coach and my sister who played for me. I have a younger sister who is 12 years younger than me, and she played for me.
Okay.
So I told my assistant and my sister, like, do your worst. Like, whatever it is, like, I will allow you guys to publicize this, and I will allow you to, like, you know, make a deal out of it, because I mean, this is probably like, it is kind of a big deal. So I'm just kind of hoping to get to it quickly and just be done with it.
Yeah.
It's not really my jam, but, yeah. So I'm actually at 819, so it's 14 wins.
Okay.
So yeah. So at 14, hopefully we get to 14 this season and
yeah,
celebrate it, enjoy the moment. And then I personally would like to use it as a very big alumni event. Be like, everybody come back. We'll have a big pizza party. It'll be great.
Mm-hmm. What, you know, you've been doing this for, you know, again, we're seasoned and experienced. You've had tremendous success, you know, 12 state championships. You've gotten to do a lot of the things that every coach dreams about, Karen. You got to coach in the McDonald's All-American game. You got to, I mean, just
sort of,
yeah,
got canceled.
You got selected for it, you know, and
selected, which is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've gotten to do these great things. What keeps you going? What keeps you motivated that every day you want to get up and put in the work, put in the grind, do all the things that needs to be done in order to continue to have the success that you've had?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I'm really passionate about the game. I love basketball and I love coaching basketball, but I think I really enjoy those moments where you have, you know, worked with a player, you've taught them something, and then you see that finally translate to the court. And then you see them just kind of like beaming with like so much pride that they did that thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so just being able to like, kind of like help kids sometimes see what they can become when they don't even realize it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then seeing them take all those steps to get there. And then they achieve that goal, whatever it may be. Maybe they just want to make varsity. Maybe they want to be all region. Maybe they want a college scholarship. Whatever their goals are, just being kind of a part of that and hoping that maybe I gave them a nudge in the right direction to help them get there. And just, you know, seeing them so proud of themselves, you know what I mean? And then that for me is just kind of like fuel for the fire. And I mean, I just love coaching. I love the kids. I mean, I don't know. It's just fun.
Mm-hmm. Coaches Are Absolutely Loving are taking over a new program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching. And during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, strip the house down to the studs. I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at a pen and a napkin at gmail.com. Well, while we're having fun, we're going to talk a little John Wooden, Coach, if that's all right with you.
Love the guy.
Yeah, yeah. And every week we honor Coach Wooden here with the John Wooden quote of the day, as you know, Coach Self. So are you ready for the John Wooden quote of the day, Karen Self, out of Seton Catholic Prep, Chandler, Arizona?
Yeah.
Okay.
I am ready.
All right. From page 170 over into page 171, here is the Wooden quote of the day. It's a little bit of a longer one here, Karen, so I apologize. So, but here is the quote of the day. Only one person can ultimately judge the level of your success. You. I believe that is what true success is. Anything stemming from that success is simply a byproduct, whether it be the score, the trophy, a national championship, fame, or fortune. They are all byproducts of success rather than success itself. Indicators that you perhaps succeeded in the more important contest.
Love it. That is awesome. And also right in my wheelhouse in terms of like how we do things within my program.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think, you know, along the same lines, maybe not exactly the same, but Jay Billis in his book Toughness,
yep,
says winning is a byproduct of doing things right, or yeah, doing things correctly, I think. And that is one of my favorite quotes, because I just feel like if our character is high, then our work ethic is going to be great. And mm-hmm, if our work ethic is great, then good things are going to happen. And when we treat people the right way, when we conduct ourselves the right way, when we have great work ethic, like everything else is going to take care of itself. And I actually, like I say to the kids all the time, I don't care if I never win another game, but as long as we do things the right way, mm-hmm, then the winning will take care of itself. If we play hard, if I don't have to coach effort in practice, if you can run your lanes hard, if you can box out, if you can do all those things to the best of your ability, and you represent yourself well,
mm-hmm,
you represent the jersey well, mm-hmm, then the winning will happen. Like the winning will happen.
Yeah.
The rest of it takes care of itself.
I think no matter what the wins and losses are with the particular team, the most enjoyable seasons that you have as a coach are the years where you can just coach the players. You could coach the game. You're not coaching personalities. You're not coaching effort. You're not coaching, people worried about their role or their shots or all that other stuff. And when you try to put that in front of the players and say, hey, this is what I need from you. And related to that, you also say, what do you need from me to get us to this point where all we're worried about is coaching the game and playing the game? What are the steps that we need to take to get there? And those were for me. I had some years where I was, 19-5, and gosh, it was just not a whole lot of fun. And I had other years. I had one year I was 8-16, and it was great. It was great because the kids were just so easy to coach and fun to be around, and they were coachable, and you didn't have all that other stuff to worry about, but they focused on the process day in and day out. And I don't know, I'm kind of going on my own diatribe here, but that's kind of something that makes me think of that as well.
Yeah. I mean, I agree so much with that, because I mean, right now I am faced with a very young, inexperienced team. I have two seniors with a ton of experience. They'll both go on and play in college, and they're being fantastic leaders for our younger kids. But like you said, like in some of those years, maybe that you didn't have as many wins, it might not have been the winningest season, but you're happy and you're healthy because the relationships are good and the kids will play hard for you and they're eager to learn. And those are the teams that are just the most fun to coach. And that's kind of like actually where I'm at right now, mm-hmm, because I have a whole team of young, I have four freshmen on varsity. I have two sophomores on varsity and I have two juniors on varsity for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is the majority of our team. Mm-hmm. And so like at times it's trying because you're teaching, but you're teaching at a much slower pace than you're used to going.
Yep.
But also it's very rewarding because they are finding so many new successes because they have so much to learn. Mm-hmm. And I just keep telling them, trust the process. Like, this is going to work out in the end. It's going to be great, but you guys have to just keep trusting us. We're going to put things in front of you at the pace that we think that you can handle them. And so we might be off to a slower start than other years, but that doesn't mean we're not going to make leaps and bounds by playoffs. Uh-huh. And I feel like we can be a pretty good team by the end of the year, you know, especially with like how hard these kids are working. So, uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, we're not having a 25 win season this year. I don't see that in our future. But also, like, what a great opportunity for me to kind of get back to my roots in terms of like just really, really teaching, but also no egos. Like, we have no egos on our team. We are just hungry to learn and get after it. And I'm just enjoying it so much. Mm-hmm.
Well, as you said, you are a defense first coach and you're going to move these kids to be in a position to be successful through their defense. So let's go there here. Coach Self, talk about your half court defensive philosophy, what you believe in, how you teach it. Maybe if you get a chance to describe some of the drills that you run, to implement that. As I tell most of the guests, once we get to this point, I just kind of completely turn it over to you. If I have to interrupt, I will do so as politely as I can, but, tell us what you do with your half court defense there at Seton Catholic Prep.
Okay. You promise not to hang up on me when I tell you this.
Oh God! I don't care. I don't care. I'm all about the ratings. Let's get controversial here.
No, not really controversial. No. I mean,
what do you got?
Basically, you know, some people force baseline, some people force middle, or whatever. We force so we can. That's all we do. Yep. That is our entire. My whole shtick is you are not going to get to your dominant hand no matter what. Mm-hmm. If you have a set move that's like kind of your primary, you're not going to get a chance to run it. You're not going to be able to do it. And we really, really drill that really hard. And so basically, we are kind of a pack line defense. I don't deny, because we tend to be, we're a smaller school. We've been playing up in a higher division for 16 years. And so we're not the most athletic team out there ever. We're always, you know, we're a private school. So it costs a lot of money to go there. And we don't recruit, we don't give scholarships. Like, it's not like that. And so we just, we figure we're probably going to get beat off the bounce or we're going to get beat back door if we try and deny. And early on in my career, I would like try and deny on the wings. And then I was just like, yeah, after 2 minutes, these kids are gassed. Our bench is, we don't have much of a bench, so they're not going to actually do it. And so there's no point in like doing that. So we tend to sit kind of in the gap. Mm-hmm. And we pressure the heck out of the ball. We tell our kids, if you did not force your player to put the ball on the floor to get away from you, then you did not do your job defensively. Like, we're going to pressure you when you have the ball. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to sit in gaps. So if you do bust out and, you know, make an attacking drive, we can show and slow you down. And if we need to switch and recover, we can. But we're going to sit in those gaps and prevent those drives. And then we're going to push you to your left hand or whatever. If you're left-handed, you're going to get pushed to your right hand. And mm-hmm. we're going to be absolutely relentless in the pursuit of taking away your dominant hand. Mm-hmm. This includes, like, when we start teaching, hey, this is a stance. This is how we play on the ball. On the ball defense, close enough to touch, sit in your stance, watch waist, hands high, pressure, talk the entire time. I always tell them, like, you know, everybody knows a close talker, right? Somebody that's just like, is way too close to you when they're talking and you're just like, can you just give me some space? And I'm like, we are going to be close talkers on defense and we're going to be in your face and we're going to be constantly forcing you to back up and to feel uncomfortable with our presence. And so the goal is to pressure the ball so much that they pay attention to the defender and not to the offense they're running and not to the teammates that are cutting and hopefully not being open. And then, you know, so we pressure the ball. We're going to, if we're, you know, sitting in a gap and the ball comes to our player, we're closing out hard, but we're closing out hard offset. So we're taking away their dominant hand. Hmm. We're forcing them to go to their left hand. And for the most part, and this may just be Arizona, it might just be girls basketball, I don't know. But I watch a ton of college basketball. And when players go to their weak hand, when they actually do, for the most part, they pass or they pick up their dribble mm-hmm. or they spin back to their dominant hand. Mm-hmm. And so we just sit on that and we wait for them to spin back and then we jump it really hard. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we're very big on no front.
Real quick, Karen, sorry. On the scouting report, if you've got a left-handed kid, are you forcing them right, or is it all like lack left?
No. We're forcing you right. So okay, they've got to be smart. They've got to be able to recognize, know the scout. And that's the thing. You got to know your scout. You got to know the tendencies of the player that you're likely to guard. And then we're forcing those players to their right. Always close enough to touch, always, hand high to, contest shots. And then when we, when we're, playing, we are always denying any cuts that are coming through the lane. We're always stepping off those cuts and forcing them off that line. Either go back where you came from, go back door, and we'll close down on you hard. Or you're going to, kind of just divert. But you're not going to go. You're not cutting across the lane to the high post or cutting across the lane to the block. You're not getting there. So we tend to be a rather physical team. We're always going to step off those cuts. I like to high hedge on screens. But I will, for really, really high ball screens, a lot of people call it different things. We call it push. But, if my player is running a high ball screen for, say, a point guard, I'm going to just jam the screener and not let them roll or slip. And my teammate, I'm going to call it early and they're going to get under the screen. But aside from like a high ball screen like that, we're going to high hedge on everything. And we're going to go over the screen with the defender and kind of under our teammate that's high hedging. And we're going to get back to, we'll catch up to ours and then let the hedger get back to theirs. And, I feel like we're pretty strong with help side defense. We're pretty strong at rotating. And so these are, we're just trying to really be the aggressor and send the message that whatever your offense is, we're going to disrupt it. And we're not just going to sit back and react to you. We're going to dictate to you what you're allowed to do. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to drive left. But when you do that, you've got to go all the way left and finish through contact. Uh-huh. You're not coming back to your right hand. Mm-hmm. And we expect when they go left, we expect them to kick. So we're jumping that pass. And that's been a pretty successful strategy for us over the years. Sometimes depending on the talent level of my team, there might be five different ways we play on ball screens. Off ball screens, if I have a talented enough team, we very rarely switch. I really am not into switching, but there mm-hmm. are times where that might be the only way we play screens. We might just choose to switch everything.
Yeah.
But you got to have some really savvy kids. You have to have some really experienced kids to be able to high hedge, push, switch, trap, there's a million ways you can play screen.
Yeah.
We don't ice screens because you can't force we can on an ice.
Yeah.
Yep. So we don't ice screens, we try to be the aggressor. That's our whole philosophy.
Yes. What are some ways that you get your kids to buy into that in practice? What are maybe two or three of your favorite drills to get your kids to play really aggressively on the ball, but get in those pack line lanes off the ball and take away those gaps off that dribble penetration, different things like that?
I never shut up on the court as a coach, even in practice and games, I literally never stop talking. So if they're not where they're supposed to be, they're hearing gap, 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 calling their name, get in the gap, but we start very slow in teaching and then we build up. So I feel like a strength for mine as a coach would probably be just like breaking things down into their most minute detail. And then from there, drilling and building up the skill to where they can go game speed. Mm-hmm. But we literally will start with, I will literally start with like a closeout drill where they're just like, I'll put a person on the block and a person on like the free throw line. And then they have to bounce pass closeout, but they have to close out on the right hand. And the first time we do it, the first few times we do it, we're just closing out to touch, being very verbally aggressive, digging and raking at the ball and forcing the person that is catching the ball. They have to pivot. Usually we'll say, you got to pivot three times before that portion of the drill is over. And then it's usually a group of three. So then the next person, the person that just got closed out on then is now the defender and they're going to pass it back to the other line and then bounce pass, close out, really aggressive, very vocal, pivot three times. And then we just kind of rotate like kind of like a little weave of the three people, like mm-hmm. bounce pass, close out. So we do that. And then we add a dribble. And then we tell them they must rip to their right hand. So when they catch it, they have to rip right. And so we are closing out offset on that right hand. So as soon as they try and rip right, we're already way ahead of them, and we've jumped that already. And so it's like one dribble they pick up, and then it's, you know, and then we're in their face, dead, 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 calling dead, dribble for everybody. And then, you know, and then we kind of reset that, and then we go back, bounce, pass, close out, rip right, one dribble, and dead, dead, dead. Mm-hmm. And so we do that, and then we add, okay, they can go left for a dribble, but then they have to spin back right. And then we build it in that very, you know, like, I don't even know, like very minute detail. And then from there, we'll start to go we'll build it into like a one-on-one drill. So I very rarely let the kids play one-on-one from the center. Mm-hmm. I make them usually play from the wing. So we'll do bounce, like we'll start the defense on the block and they'll bounce pass to the wing, and then they'll close out on the right hand. And then the offense gets like maybe five dribbles and then we're live. Once we've built up to that point, then we're live. It's a very incremental process. And so we're building up, and then we add, you know, off ball, what does that look like in the gap? And then we add like when you're help side, and then we add, you know, we're just constantly talking about jump the ball, jump the ball, jump the ball, so that, you know, we're always available. Like when the drive happens, we're available for help. So some of my favorite drills, I like when just setting up kind of like maybe a four-man shell and having a coach stand behind the offensive player, behind the offensive player, and coaches put their arms out like they're in a T. So my right arm, my hand is even with my shoulder, left hand is even with my left shoulder. And then the defense has to pick a side to tap my hand. And so the defender in front has to tap my hand. And so the second that they lean forward or step forward to get maybe to my left hand, that's the cue to the offense that they can go. And now we have artificially created a help and rotate situation without it being like, without it being less competitive. Mm-hmm. So one of my pet peeves in practice is when kids don't go hard on each other, they take it easy on each other. Or when like we're trying to drill something, but the kids don't feel like they can play hard because it's too manufactured. And so I like to set up my help and rotate drill that way, so that the second that defender is reaching for my hand, that we are live. And now they're beat because they have to tap my hand before they can go. And then we're live, right? Mm-hmm. And I think we did it in Omaha.
Yeah.
Did we do that in Omaha?
We may have. I think so. Yeah.
And so I really like it because it's not so manufactured that there's like, I want you to play dummy D for a second and then get live. And I've seen it done lots of ways where they're like, go ahead and get beat, and then we're going to go on. And that's like so hard for kids to do. Or the defender turns their back to the offense, and the offense puts the ball on the defender's back. And then as soon as they rip the ball, then they're live. You know, it's just less realistic, you know. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I love any kind of help and rotate drill. I love any kind of drill that's like jump to the ball, because I feel like too often kids get caught hugged up on their person on the weak side, mm-hmm. and they're so vulnerable to like any kind of cross screen or weak side screen. And so, you know, that's again, a pet peeve of mine as a coach. Like, I don't ever want us getting caught in one of those weak side screens. And so we're very, very much jump to the ball, make sure that you're in good help position. So if there's a drive from the other side, you can help, you can rotate, and then box out. So yeah, I mean, I don't know that I really answered your question at all.
No, it's good. And I think what the biggest thing that I'm hearing, you know, Karen, is just the consistency of the verbiage, the consistency of the philosophy, and we're not changing this, and it's just drilled into, you know, the things that you should be doing. It's drilled into their head. You got to get into that gap, 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 you know, jump to the ball, jump to the ball, jump to the ball, you know, all those things. That's what you should be doing, you know, and I think that's, it sounds like to me, that's what you and your staff are doing on a daily basis in practice, and that's why it's been so successful for you.
Well, I like to think we've had more success than we've had our fair share. And so, yes, yeah. But we are very consistent, if nothing else. And the other thing, I think as a young coach, I don't know when it was that I realized it. It may have been even when I was a player in college. If you're using short phrases that you use all the time.
Yep.
Like sometimes coaches are yelling out to their players during a game and they don't really know. You can't always hear what your coach is saying.
Yeah.
But if it's the same verbiage in the same cadence with the same gestures, then you know what they're saying to you.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah.
I can't tell you how many times my freshman year of college, I got told, don't leave your feet. So, you know, we're going with the ball. I mean, oh my God, I can still hear it in my head to this day. Don't leave your feet. Till you know, where you're going with the ball. Cause I used to like get up in the air and be like, yeah, what am I going to do? You know, like, yeah. Kind of no plan.
Yeah.
And so like, I feel like for me, I have some very distinct verbiage that I use for, I mean, I tell kids all the time, if you can test a shot, like that's your box out. Mm-hmm. So we say all the time, shot, box, then rebound. Mm-hmm. Like that's it. Shot, box, then rebound. Like stop worrying about the ball. Let some guard sweep up that rebound. But you're the one that contested the shot. That's your box out. So if a kid hears in a game, shot, they don't, and they see, and I use a gesture with my hand where I'm like showing a contest. And then I flip my hand to show box. For box out, and then I put both hands up for rebound. If they see that hand go high and then flip around, they know exactly what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. We could be in arena because we've played. Like the one unique thing about Arizona is if you've ever played res ball, you can easily play. We played a state championship in front of 7,000 people. We played a state semifinal in front of 5,000 people.
Yeah,
I mean they turn out for basketball.
Yeah.
And so you cannot be heard. So you have to have hand gestures for all of your plays. You have to have hand gestures for like so many different things. And so if I do that same gesture, my kid, they could just say, they can hear it in their head. Mm-hmm. And I know they can because after they graduate, they tell me, oh my God, I hear you in my sleep. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, my own sister will literally tell you like the amount of times that she heard, she only played for me for 1 year. But the amount of time she heard Carrie box out like in that one short season was probably more than she heard it in her entire life.
Yeah.
Like she, you know, I mean, she had, I mean, it's a really, you know, unique story as to how she ended up playing for me. Yeah, I mean, like I was like, did nobody teach you to box out? Did dad not teach you to box out? Like what on earth? So that was her, you know. I mean, luckily we won a state championship in her senior year when she was with me. So thank goodness for that. Because yeah. I don't think she'd forgive me if we hadn't won state.
All is forgiven at the dinner table now. You may now eat with us because you have a gold medal.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, yep. Exactly. There you go.
Yep. Coaches, you know just as well as I do that we're always looking for new and different ways to motivate our players and programs. But sometimes it's hard to find that perfect source that we're looking for. Over the past 25 years, I've collected hundreds of handouts to help motivate my players and programs, and now I'd like to share some of my favorites with you. The A Pen and a Napkin 101 Best Handouts booklet is now available to you for only $15. In this booklet, you'll find motivational material for all types of situations and individuals to help you communicate your values to your players and program. For ordering information, you can either DM me on Twitter or email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com for details. Let's talk a little math. You're a math teacher, Karen, math and economics. You know, one of the things that you said you would like to talk about is statistics and statistical analysis and some of the things that you look at as a head coach. So take us down that little rabbit hole there. And what are some things that your eyes go to when the stat sheet pops out?
Offensive boards is one of my big ones. We have a goal. We want at least, you know, 40% of our missed shots, we want offensive boards off of those. And in my better years and with our better teams, like a few years ago, we had 6'3" twins.
Okay.
So,
pretty simple.
Twin sisters. Yeah. They played at Gonzaga and they're fantastic. When they were with us, we were like 50%. If 50% of our missed shots need to be offensive rebounds. So I'm really, really big on O-boards. I tell the kids all the time, O-boards win championships. Like, you've got to rebound. We can't just stand and watch and hope for the best. Mm-hmm. And so that is something I'm checking all the time.
Are you sending like two to the board, three to the board, five to the board, three? Okay.
We'll send three. And, well, you know, so it kind of, okay, again, it could depend. It depends on who we're playing. It depends on how, if they're not really a running team, we'll send four. I'm very, you know, I'm not much of a risk taker. I'm very much, somebody's going to be back on defense for sure. But depending on the scenario, like, you know, it depends on the opponent or whatever, or also it depends on what we see in our scout. Like if they're not great at boxing out, we'll send four.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just will.
Okay.
If they leak out a lot, if they like to leak out and cheat, then we sometimes will have to send two back, but we're really trying to send three to the best, for the most part. But I look at O boards, I look at how many we give up. And I always tell the kids, you know, it happens, long rebounds, you know, people chuck up long shots, long rebounds, right?
Yep.
So it does happen, you know, so it's not like we're going to hold the team to zero offensive rebounds, but that for me is a stat that I really, really key in on.
Okay.
Free throw percentage for sure. That is a big one for us. But honestly, like the one thing I always try and tell, like I do a lot of different mentorship programs. I'm a mentor coach for the WBCA. I'm mm-hmm. in a group called 28.5, which is an amazing, amazing mentorship group for women coaches.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Okay. So 28.5, it was started during the pandemic by Nikki Haysfort, who was an assistant at Drake for many years. She was also an assistant for Doug Bruno, coincidentally.
Okay.
At DePaul. She coached two of my players that had gone on to play in college, one at Barry University in Florida. That's how I met her. And then another one at Colgate. So she's been in the game for a while, but during COVID lockdown, her and one of her former high school club teammates, who is a high school coach, started talking about how they should really do some sort of Zoom thing, but also like something for women coaches. And so they started this thing called 28.5, kind of obvious that that's the size of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And they started inviting coaches to like sit in on these Zooms, and they started doing it in such a way that is really honestly very addicting, because you go, we kind of get in the Zoom as a group and we talk about, you know, we celebrate we're really big on making sure that people like share their successes. Whether it's my first varsity win or whether I just hit 800 with,
mm-hmm.
Or whether I was named coach of the year or whatever. And we try and really encourage people to share those successes so we can celebrate them, because honestly speaking, women are really, really terrible about pointing out their own success.
Yeah.
Always trying to defer to other people. So it's great for that reason. And then from there, we have timely topics based on the time of year, and what's going on in our programs. And they ask for topic suggestions every month when you kind of do your like monthly registration for the meeting. Mm-hmm. But then we go into breakout rooms. And so you're in a breakout room with like four coaches, maybe five coaches. And so you're really getting an opportunity for everybody to share
mm-hmm.
related to that particular topic. Hey, everybody bring your favorite baseline out of bounds play this week, you know, or bring your favorite defense, half court defensive drill, whatever the topic happens to be. Or, hey, if you're a veteran, seasoned, experienced coach,
there you have it.
Then you, what do you wish you had known when you were younger? Or if you're a young coach, what would you like to tell, you know, or what questions do you have for those seasoned coaches? And then we sit in that room for like maybe 8-10 minutes, and we talk, and everybody gets an opportunity to share. And you're talking with coaches from all over the country. And you're talking with coaches from all different backgrounds and levels of experience. And it's just fantastic. Mm-hmm. I just love it. And mm-hmm. it's very energizing. Every month I come out of that, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to try that, or I'm going to do that. Or boy, one time I was in a room and I mentioned that we had this game coming up against the school in Chicago. They were traveling to Arizona and we were playing them. And this lady in the room was like, you know, I see you're kind of typing on our computer. I don't think I'm anything of it. And then she unmutes and she goes, you know, Karen at Seton Catholic and Chandler. And I was like, yeah. And she's like, yeah, okay, your huddle film's on the way. There you go. She sent me like three films.
Wow.
And we ended up winning by like 3 points. Like we were down most of the fourth quarter. It was just like one of those things where it was like, you know, just people supporting each other. You know what I mean? But female coaches and like coming up with ideas, like how do you do it when you have kids? Like, you know what I mean? How do you do it when you're married? And you know, like how do you get your spouse involved with your team, like just all every topic you can possibly think of.
Yep.
So That is a great, that's a great program, 28.5 for female coaches. But yeah, I don't even remember why I brought it up, but something about mentorship.
It was something mentorship, and then we went from free throw percentage to the 28.5 club.
We went really fast.
That's okay.
Oh, because in my meeting the other day, we were talking about advice for younger coaches. And one of the things I always tell younger coaches is do your own stats. Mm-hmm. Because we're not college. Okay, we don't have a staff of like 15 people. We're not college. So do your own stats. You'd be shocked at how much you can learn about your team and about what you need to work on as a team when you watch those games live, like all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can send your film to Huddle Assist and they'll break it down for you and they will send you the stats. And sometimes they're accurate and sometimes they're not as accurate.
Yeah.
It depends on who's doing the stats. But I find that when I'm watching the game and I'm taking stats on it, I'm also flipping that page over and writing a list of things that I need to address in practice.
Sure.
Like we're not doing a good job boxing out. We're not hedging well on screens, or these particular kids need more work at hedging on screens. And so I just think if you're letting somebody else do your stats for you, like you're definitely saving time. You are definitely saving time, but you're missing out on some really valuable insight that you could get from your own game film.
Mm-hmm.
So that's for me, that's something I always try and tell like younger coaches. It's a great tool to save time, but it's also, there's a cost to that. There's, as we say in economics, there's an opportunity cost for that. You're giving up. What you're giving up is that chance to see where your team needs a little bit of extra work.
Yeah. Let's wrap up here with the weight room, Karen. That was another thing that you said you'd be willing to talk about here. Tell us a little bit about your program there at Seton Catholic Prep and what you're doing to get your young ladies stronger and more athletic.
So actually I have a strength coach.
Sure.
When I was in college, the head strength and conditioning coach at Arizona State was Tim McClellan. And coincidentally, when I got married, my husband said, oh, I want to invite some people from work. And I was like, okay, just give me names and addresses. And he's like, well, you know that lady Janet that I work with? And I'm like, yeah. And I didn't know her last name. And he goes, yeah, her husband says he knows you. And I was like, who's her husband? I really doubt it. And he goes, Tim McClellan. And I was like, oh, my strength and conditioning coach from Arizona State. So Tim was head strength and conditioning coach at ASU. And then actually was at our wedding. Tim and Janet were at our wedding.
Okay.
And then I had a player in the early 2000s who ended up being a McDonald's All-American. She went on to play. It was an All-American at Vanderbilt, played in the WNBA for the Fever, played overseas. She was an absolutely phenomenal player. And she told me she wanted to play in a top 25 college program when she was a freshman. And I was like, I'm ill-equipped to help this kid get prepared. I got the basketball side, but the strength side of it, I need help. So I reached out to Tim, and he had helped me through some training things after college that were really, really helpful. And so I reached out to Tim and I said, I don't know what to do. And so he got her on a program. Sometimes she would go work with him. Sometimes she'd work with me and I would implement his program. But moving forward after that, he became our strength coach, did a ton of ACL injury prevention work, like really, really has helped our program, to get strong and get explosive in a way that is just made these kids physically ready for college basketball.
Yep.
And I think much faster than the pace of a normal high school program. I take zero credit for it other than being friends with him and bringing in the right people. I mean, you got to have the right people in your program, but we do a lot of, landings. So we do a ton of hurdles, like low hurdles where we're doing different landings, little twisting landings. We do a lot of deceleration work. And we do a ton of explosive work. We do a ton of like resisted cord work, whether it's lateral hops or whether it's sprint back pedal or defensive slides with the cords. Like we do a ton of stuff to like really, really help with our explosive power. We do everything really, really sport specific. And so I just remember so many times being told, well, the girls can do what the football boys are doing. It's on the board in the weight room. And I'm like, no. our basketball girls do not need to do what football players do.
No, don't ever take a back seat. Don't ever take a back seat. Yeah.
And so I am just really leaned heavily into Tim and his expertise. He is extremely well known. He has trained NFL guys. He's trained WNBA players. He's trained professionals in just about every single sport known to man. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, he is fantastic, and he loves our kids, and he's, you know, he's very, very close to retire. I mean, he's basically retired from everything except for my program, and I don't think he has the heart to tell me to go away. So.
And he's got email to do it now. You couldn't do that back then, you know? So,
exactly.
Yeah. So he must really like you.
Yeah, we loved him, and he does so much great for our girls, and he's also, like, really great at, like, motivational stuff and the mental side of the sport. And so he brings so much more to the table than just, hey, I wrote you the strength program, because mm-hmm. he works with our kids very closely. Mm-hmm. So yes, I did say that I can speak to strength training, but what I'd speak to is get yourself somebody really good and get them to come in and work with your kids,
and then get the heck out of the way.
Yeah,
absolutely. Awesome stuff, Karen. If folks want to know more about you or your program, how can they reach out to you?
They can reach out my email. It's my first initial K, last name self, like myself or yourself, at SeatonBlackBlack.org. Seaton is SETON. And I have an unhealthy addiction to my email. So if they reach out, I will most definitely respond. My daughter's right next to me nodding her head like, yes, fully unhealthy addiction to email.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. You could have other things that could be much less healthy of an addiction. So it could be much worse. It could be a much, much worse thing. So you could tell your daughter that as well. So. Awesome. Karen, thanks so much for coming on the podcast this week. I hope you have enjoyed your debut on A Pen and a Napkin.
This has been awesome. And I know that we're trying to wrap up, but I just got to tell you my pen and a napkin story, because everybody should share that with you.
Okay.
Mine was Sweet and Low packets and sugar packets at my sister's wedding. And my uncle, who was a college coach, teaching me how to break a box in one. And so we were literally positioning the sugar packets against the sweet and low packets, and he was showing me, okay, so what are you going to do if I set a play here, what are you going to do? And like, I think every coach has one of those moments. Mm-hmm. I think that should be included, you know, like you should ask them, what's your pen and a napkin story?
What's your pen? Okay. Everybody
have one.
Let me test that with some focus groups.
I shouldn't tell you how to do your job. How about that?
It's okay. Hey, I think we've spent some good time together. You know that I am open for any and all constructive criticism and suggestions. And I am at heart a coach, and I have stolen much more than I have come up with myself. And so I am more than willing to do that as well. Even with the podcast, I will beg, borrow, and steal as well. So like I said, let me have my manager put together some focus groups, and we'll get some data feedback. And let's be honest. I'm going to think about it going to work tomorrow, and I'll probably, you know, figure it out, figure something out then. So, but no, I love it. Love it. Yeah. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you enjoyed being on here.
It was awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Why don't you hold the line here a second, Karen? Again, Karen Self, soon to be. I have all the confidence in the world that she's going to take this young group and get them going. And hopefully by the end of this season, she will be the all-time winningest coach in the history of Arizona high school basketball. Done a tremendous job. We want to thank her. We want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosette Chiropractic. We don't need to thank anybody else. You need to follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. Check out our daily stuff there. Download, rate, review, give us 5 stars, subscribe, give us all that good stuff. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. For Karen Self, this is Marty Plum. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.